The following is an AI reading of my blog called
Searching for Gaima, How to Show the Middle Finger to the Hierarchy.
It is for people who don't have time to read blogs and can listen to podcasts though. So, let's go!
At times we are up and sometimes we're down. In hierarchical structures, there are winners and losers, similar to elections and other contests. To not be a loser, one can win. However, the ratio of winners to losers is relatively low. A more rational strategy is needed. One such strategy could be to not participate in the game. While this means giving up the possibility of winning and defeating others, it offers peace of mind, especially for monkeys. Robert Sapolsky studied baboons, which typically live in hierarchical structures with alpha males at the top and other individuals subordinate to them. Subordinate individuals are referred to as betas. The group of baboons that Sapolsky researched faced an intriguing situation: all the alpha males died. Although there were new contenders for this position in the hierarchy, the entire group refused to engage in the alpha male competition. And so they turned against the hierarchical structure and no longer allowed anyone to create one. They switched to peer-to-peer relationships instead. Interestingly, everyone started doing better in this new system. They were healthier, less stressed with measurably lower cortisol levels, and their lives improved overall. Rather than someone winning while others submitted, they refused to play the game anymore. This change wasn't a temporary fluctuation. The pack had been operating this way for at least 20 years, although more recent information couldn't be found. Some people have started calling these individuals who refuse to submit, but also don't need to dominate and become alphas gamma. They're easiest to find among rodents, but if you look carefully, you can find them among humans too. They are most abundant in libertarian parallel communities like parallel polis. Most people aren't born as a gamma, but they have to learn how to become one. Even making one decision isn't enough. It's something that requires training. We learn to exist within hierarchies. When a doctor wearing a white coat speaks to us, we pay close attention and yield to their authority. Similarly, when given the chance to manage something centrally, like a team at work, many of us gladly accept that role. Of course, nobody fits perfectly into an alpha, beta, or gamma category. Our positions can change based on different situations, interactions, and timeframes. In some instances, being alpha is more beneficial, while in others it's better to be beta or gamma. The question remains, what do we choose most frequently and where are we headed? Identifying gamma individuals. How can you recognize someone who fits the gamma category? They typically avoid positions with a direct supervisor, even if that person seems cool. This is why they often work as freelancers or run their own businesses. Finding them in an employment situation is rare, but if they do take such a role, it's usually balanced by something significant. For example, a significant amount of money, sufficient freedom, or an exceptionally interesting job. If they are expected to lead a team or group of people and engage in decision-making consultation with them, they express disapproval. They have no desire to be in charge of numerous programmers or construction workers. Frequently, they disregard the majority of status games, particularly those they are conscious of. They do not possess an expensive watch, a college degree, and if they do, it remains concealed, nor a high-end sports car. Status represents a concept that would effortlessly position them within a hierarchy. When boredom ensues, they extend their hand for a handshake before exiting gracefully. Gamma individuals maintain composure due to exposure to fewer uneasy relationships. This distinction delineates the difference between someone who is gamma in theory versus practice. Philosophical gammas continue to experience stress when faced with authority. Practical gammas are calm. They attempt to change relationships that are uncomfortable for them so that they can be okay with them, and if that fails, they terminate those relationships. Similar to baboons, gamma individuals do not have consistently heightened cortisol levels. One of my cherished mentors described her life experience in this manner: I am respectfully indifferent towards other people's opinions and ideas. In other words, I respect the fact that others possess their own opinions and thoughts, but I choose to live my life according to my preferences. If that means most individuals believe children should attend school, while I think children learn more when working on projects with their siblings at home, then I accept and respect their viewpoint. However, my kids remain at home. This search for their own life path makes them seem a bit odd, but they are actually nice people. If you understand that they will wisely avoid the status game and refuse to participate in it with you, you have the chance to get acquainted with individuals who both generate and demand positive, creative energy. It's an amazing feeling. They make excellent mentors because their indifference towards how things should be done is so deeply ingrained that they are happy to show you options you never even knew existed, and they often come up with them on the spot. Aren't they just non-pathological alphas? At first, this question seems logical. Isn't a gamma simply someone who, due to their skills and knowledge, has reached a specific level in the hierarchy and believes it is the correct place for them to be? A brilliant scientist who excels in their field or a company founder who is considered a good boss, they can be such a chilled-out alpha with low stress. The text that follows has been converted into a form at suitable for audio narration. I don't think this is typically the case, though. All the evolved gammas I know actively avoid hierarchies. They don't feel comfortable within them, even when they hold higher positions. A smart scientist might leave academia and research outside of the academic hierarchy, while a gamma rarely becomes a good boss because the role just doesn't suit him. He either gets a good boss as a business owner or creates an organizational structure that doesn't require one. Gamma is equally distant from alpha as it is from beta. It actively avoids hierarchies since they exhaust it and take away its energy to create and produce. How to interact with gamma? Being around the gamma is fine if you detach yourself from the need to change them. You can offer them sound advice, but be prepared for them to arrange their life in their own way, even when your guidance is well-reasoned and well-intended. Consider them as a non-deterministic element in your life. If they promise something, they typically keep it, but they make very few promises. It can be challenging to deal with them at times because one of the authorities they often disregard are social conventions. They're not impolite, they don't intend to cause harm, but if you have certain expectations rooted in a social situation, it's possible that they won't adhere to them and act according to their own will rather than societal norms. This could be something minor. For example, if you invite a gam to an elegant gala night, they might show up wearing a t-shirt and jeans without feeling embarrassed at all. In any case, one of the things that caught me off guard in Hollywood, where everyone strives to showcase their individuality, was this particular aspect of their behavior. I remember being out with a group of hackers one evening, and somehow we ended up attending some Hollywood awards ceremony. There was an intersection of fashion and film involved, although I can't recall the specific details. They almost always give out some kind of award in Hollywood. Of course, a group of us geeks arrived wearing t-shirts and shorts. From the very beginning, our attire was noticeably different from everyone else's. A friend accompanying us explained that in Hollywood, nobody really cares about dress codes. A Korean movie director, with his fashion accessory, a chihuahua held in his hand, expressed his individuality. We stood out as well, simply because you don't often come across hackers in Hollywood. Interestingly enough, not even a single disapproving glance was directed our way. However, another hacker displayed his gamma personality in alternative ways. He caught the attention of local models quite openly and actively, in fact. While he appreciated their interest, he explained that at the moment, coding took priority over spending time with Hollywood models. On a positive note, if someone with a gamma personality chooses to spend time with you, it signifies they see value in doing so. In this situation, I suggest considering unconventional ideas for overcoming your problems, ones that won't appear on Facebook or be shared by your conventional friends. Don't expect gammas to persuade you of anything, but if you understand their perspective, it's often worth pondering upon. Gammas appreciate positive feedback and fresh ideas. Engaging with a gamma can lead to a state of flow. When discussing a topic, the focus shifts from proving who is right to advancing the conversation. The goal is innovation and exploration. In this process, your status becomes less relevant as you're not competing, but rather working together towards a resolution. As you immerse yourself in the discussion with your gamma partner, time and surroundings fade away. This interaction allows for complete concentration on the matter at hand. Gammas are highly creative individuals. As they don't prioritize conventions, many gammas ask themselves, "How would this be best solved in my situation?" and often come up with alternative solutions compared to the average person, who follows established norms. This doesn't mean they completely dismiss common solutions. After all, these are prevalent because they're typically effective. Gammas utilize conventional approaches when convenient, and when they discover better alternatives, they opt for those instead. Upon initial observation, engaging with a gamma might seem like interacting with an arrogant individual in the negative sense of egoism. However, there's no comparison to others involved in this mindset. Gammas are individuals who emanate their own willpower. Most of the few gamma individuals I'm familiar with are quite affluent, yet this aspect isn't immediately noticeable about them. Since they don't play the status game, you don't notice it in their clothes, their watches, their cars, and probably not even in how they spend their money. I flew with one of them for about 6 hours within Asia. He sat behind us in economy class because I sleep anyway and I sleep well in any position. He has his own plane at home and can pilot it. He uses it in situations like I use my car when no other form of transportation suits him. Truth be told, the rich and successful gammas were the hardest for me to interact with. My brain couldn't process it. When I talk, they listen as if it's the most important thing in the world, with full awareness. Very often, they have interesting insights, but at the same time, they are extremely open to new insights from me. In the beginning, thoughts went through my head: a guy who has like $100 million in his account is listening to me, the average entrepreneur, talk about what I think about his new business idea. The first surprise was quite unexpected. Later on, they told me that after reflecting upon our conversation, they had taken the idea and improved it further. In another amusing situation involving gammas, I found myself in a group of individuals who were not acquainted with my guest. The subject matter at hand happened to be something in which Gamma excelled and had built her considerable wealth around. As evening turned into night, the discussion transitioned to more casual pub-style talk. Gamma was slightly intoxicated, as were the others present. She discussed how she would go about resolving the problem, while the rest expressed their philosophical viewpoints, largely derived from various blogs they'd encountered. What stood out in this scenario was that Gamma didn't bother mentioning her typical six-figure fee for assisting corporations with such issues. She is indeed an expert in the field. On a different note, she refrained from employing appeal to authority tactics during the conversation. This means that rather than relying on her status as an argument, she opted to present her arguments, wisdom, and experience as the foundation of her case. She wasn't lecturing anyone, but I think if I spoiled it for her and said her name and two sentences about her, everyone around here would be taking notes. My point is, Gamma has no need to impress you with their status and tell you how much experience they have. But it's worth listening to. That's why I recommend getting some practice in identifying them, because if you only perceive the other party by how you evaluate their status, you could be needlessly missing out on some really useful insights. How to become a gamma? We start with the question: who should become gamma and why? Here, the answer is simple. If it appeals to you and you feel that this would suit you, you can work on it. If you are comfortable as an alpha or beta, or in a state where you are in different positions in different life situations and have no need to change anything about it, there is no reason to change it. It's very important to choose what you devote your energy to in life. This section is for individuals who feel that transitioning to a gamma state is something they would like to invest time and effort into, as it comes naturally to them and they already exhibit some of these traits. So if gamma doesn't resonate with you, feel free to skip the following text, though I believe some of the techniques could be beneficial for alphas and betas too. What follows are a few useful life hacks, regardless of how you choose to identify yourself. If you decide to work on it, what do you gain? For me, the developed or blossomed gamma represents the epitome of a hero, someone this world needs due to their immense creative and productive energy. Additionally, there are numerous personal advantages. I believe hierarchies are unproductive. As a gamma, you experience reduced stress, improved personal relationships, a higher quality self-esteem, and you will reshape the world in your vision while working more effectively with others. I am not writing this article because I think everyone should become a gamma, but I believe that if a few of them blossom around me, I will be happier, because these are the people who take me the furthest in life and make my stay on this planet more enjoyable. So how to do it? Let me repeat, gamma is not a state. It is something to work on and work towards. You don't have to flat out tell your boss off. That's more like rebellion anyway. Walk away from whatever hierarchy and its evaluative function that doesn't suit you. If you feel like you're in a company where it matters who has the prettiest spouse, better car, higher income, or academic degrees, politely leave. Not because you are better, but because there are much better ways to spend your time, like creating something, for example. How you value yourself at any moment should be based on how you see yourself, not in comparison to other people, but in comparison to what you create. As you evaluate yourself, replace questions like, am I a better entrepreneur or partner than person XY? With questions that focus on your personal growth and happiness, such as, am I improving compared to who I was yesterday? Am I content with the way I live my life? This approach helps you measure your progress against your own standards, rather than comparing yourself to others. Another method involves recognizing that what matters most is who you are, not who you aren't. For example, gammas focus on their positive qualities and abilities instead of dwelling on their shortcomings. This mindset also serves as an effective personal coping strategy. One common pitfall to avoid is rebellion, which can be seen as a form of submission with the opposite intent. When authority says stop, rebels may continue, but they are still controlled by that authority, simply doing the opposite of what's instructed. Picture being around someone who confidently asserts their will. When inspired to create something new, they act on it because they believe it should exist. Gammas carefully consider how they spend their time and aim to improve themselves compared to the previous day, as they perceive it personally. They collaborate on projects that make sense to them, rather than being driven by external factors like work or startups. When comfortable with someone, gammas may engage in lengthy conversations, but if tired or bored, they will politely say goodbye and leave to rest. To become a gamma, start by living consciously, train your awareness of situations, and look for the truth in life. Meditation can help, but it's not enough on its own. Delve deeply into understanding yourself and others. Most people live in a mental fog, merely going through the motions without fully engaging with their surroundings. When you decide to live consciously, examine your relationships and activities closely and inquire, what is the truth? However, this alone isn't sufficient, as your brain may create a narrative to rationalize your current actions and choices. To live consciously, two elements are necessary: being in the present moment, perceiving what's occurring, and differentiating between the story and reality. Let's consider an example. Suppose I agreed to a mortgage, then someone requested me to develop a decentralized poker. By the way, the initial version of Bitcoin featured a built-in poker client. Initially, it appeared like a good concept, and I desired to determine if this could be executed in a decentralized manner. Now, I'm working on it because I'm familiar with the decentralized poker project. The project is taking 3 times longer than expected, but since the client is paying and it helps me pay off my mortgage, I keep reminding myself of the story that led to this decision. I want to see if such a thing can be done in a decentralized way. My mental fog prevents me from examining this decision further. Although I haven't promised anyone to finish the project, I still need to pay that mortgage and enjoy working on decentralized technology. So, I continue programming based on the goal that made sense to me at that time. If I were to remove this mental fog and ask a simple question, is this the best use of my time? Do I want the world to have decentralized poker? Could I spend my time more effectively? These questions would evaluate the situation from the perspective of the present moment, not an outdated decision from the past. What authority am I afraid of when considering changing this decision? The worst one, my former self. Does that mean I made the wrong choice a few years ago? Will it compromise my integrity, Considering each situation individually, these questions are highly relevant. However, post-rationalization soon sets in. I'm doing this to pay off the mortgage. Uncertainty is quite challenging, and without income from this project, I'd be in trouble. In truth, there's more than one solution. Post-rationalization is just a story I tell myself. In reality, I have options: hiring someone for a poker project and mentoring them, selling my apartment and living in a cheaper rental, or renting out the apartment. I may even gradually find another source of income. There are multiple possible solutions, but not living consciously hides these possibilities from us. Mental fog and post-rationalization obscure our vision. Each person is constantly growing and changing. Would you enjoy going out for a beer with your younger self from 20 years ago? I might find myself getting bored or having a big argument with him. Is it necessary to maintain consistency with our past choices? Of course not. We grow and develop, just like our life circumstances do. Let's avoid seeing changes in things as an attack on our integrity or sense of identity. A helpful psychological trick is to give yourself a new first and last name each year. If I'm considering a choice made 2 years ago by Peter Johnson instead of me, it allows me to view it with fresh perspective. This name could represent a stage in your life that you're currently in. You don't need to share this with anyone. It's simply about understanding integrity in light of our ongoing growth and development. Additionally, being aware and exploring new things requires energy. We don't make most decisions in life consciously, and I don't believe that's even an achievable goal. We'd get tired very quickly. However, it is good to really explore the important things in life and clear away mental fog. If I unconsciously decide whether to have coffee or tea, there are no long-term fatal consequences. But if I'm stuck in a mental fog about my daily activities for 8 hours because I don't want to admit to myself that I'm not enjoying it anymore, then I've got a serious problem. Now, what does all this have to do with gamma? Well, those who live consciously view reality through facts, the current situation, and the present moment. They focus on their current values and needs. In this way, a gamma doesn't rely on the authority of past decisions or worry about what people will think when they stop doing something or change their mind. The only reference is oneself, whether one is improving and doing what they want to do, not what any authority, including one's past self, thinks. This characteristic is truly essential in my perspective. By embracing this approach, you'll become more cautious with the commitments you make to others. You'll find yourself saying no more frequently, and when you do say yes, it's likely going to be, yes, I'll assist you now because it makes sense, but once it ceases making sense for me, someone else will need to take over. Actions, not opinions. Virtually every gamma individual I know emphasizes actions rather than opinions. In parallel polis, we refer to this as the ultra-constructive method. I might have an opinion about how to improve the world and share it on Facebook, garnering likes and feeling satisfied with myself. However, I'm not going to save the planet from plastic waste, global warming, poverty, or a deficiency of liberty in that manner. A single day dedicated to action holds more worth than 50 days devoted to conversation. A gamma is indifferent about your viewpoint unless they aim to convert it into their actions. An opinion or an idea is of minimal significance, and a gamma favors action. The text has been converted into an audio narration format with minimal wording changes and preserving markdown formatting. The content remains close to the original, ensuring clarity and listenability. Here's the converted text. It is exempt from hierarchy. It doesn't need to ask permission, but it doesn't rely on it to influence other people's actions either. So if gamma wants to change something for the better, it must decide whether to act. Of course, the simplest decision is not to act, and most problems can thus be worked around by not acting. This may sound a bit backward, but that's only until one realizes that writing an opinion on Facebook is virtue signaling rather than action. Thus, it doesn't move us any closer to our goal. Maybe someone will change their mind, but maybe we just want to show that our opinion is better and we are presenting our values. But that won't change anything in the reality around us. Striking against global warming will do nothing to prevent it. It is very difficult to change other people's actions, even if we impose those actions through regulation. people make choices according to what is convenient for them. If the gamma decides to act, it can cooperate with other people in doing so. Actions say more about what he thinks than any expressed opinion. I learned this insight from a friend who explained to me that he no longer asks other people what they think, but what they do. It's one of the reasons I often agree with people on the left, especially those who are doing something. If people on the left choose to bypass the school system and raise their children differently, while running a business and creating new things along the way, I don't care who they vote for, their actions are practical solutions to real-world problems they perceive as important in society, and their theoretical solutions can't hurt me. The gamma individual must first of all apply this approach to themselves. If I have a strong opinion or think something is important, I have to ask how can I turn that into action. Awareness of hierarchies and status games, to be hated, the overseers could accept, to be fought, they could comprehend. But merely being disregarded infuriated them deeply. Simultaneously, surpassing their existence was a complete denial of their rule, wiping out their entire race of rulers. Paul Rosenberg, The Breaking Dawn. Gamma is identified by attempting to distinguish itself from hierarchies. Initially, we must acknowledge the hierarchy and decide whether we want to fit in somewhere within it. This idea is connected to the previous point, for instance. Roman Stoic Cotto believed expressing one's viewpoint through action was easier than using words. He walked barefoot and wore no undergarments beneath his toga, which wasn't fashionable even during his time. A way to recognize hierarchies is to aim lower, not higher. Identifying when the status game occurs isn't as straightforward as it may seem. You won't always succeed in this task. The status game isn't just about wearing a Rolex or using a reusable cup at the coffee shop to save the planet and show off your environmental consciousness. It's also played out in debates when you need to win an argument or seek praise from a moral authority instead of praising yourself. There are many more status games and hierarchies than most people realize, so being aware of them requires some training for even those considered as gamma. The next step is figuring out how to opt out of the status game. This can't be achieved by merely moving down in the hierarchy like Cotto did. That's just training yourself not to bother about a lack of status and getting used to it, unless you want to be a submissive beta. You certainly can't do this by pointing out others playing the status game. You'd only create a new one. The key is to indifferently respect the status games around you without actively participating in them. When engaging in conversations about problems, focus on finding solutions rather than determining who is right. Adopting this approach can significantly boost your career by making you highly effective at problem solving. By not participating in status games, you can gain an advantage as these games rely on everyone's involvement. Alphas, in particular, depend on others playing along with their status games. Avoiding these situations and ignoring alphas who attempt to draw you into them is a quick way to outmaneuver them in hierarchy. Lastly, striving to be a better gamma can also be considered as engaging in a status game. However, this is rarely acknowledged or discussed by others. Evaluating gammas against one another becomes difficult since their inner worlds are not visible. Creating a ranking function and assigning statuses based on it proves challenging, but if you're working to get out of hierarchies, don't do it because it's cool and you want to be like someone else. Think of it as inner work, as inner growth. Compare yourself to yourself. Being a gamma doesn't mean you'll be part of a club. Gammas interact with all people, and it's rather rare to meet one of them, and alphas and betas don't appreciate it that much anyway. If they don't understand how you work, you'll be more of a complication to them. It's not a competition, and it doesn't have any levels. Gammas are different and can't be compared to each other. By the way, I haven't heard a single gamma say they are a gamma, though I know some of them are aware of the theory. Non-judgment Laurie Losh is a friend of mine who invented a way to gamify human interactions. The recipe is simple: no gossip, no triangulation, no personal judgments. She uses this rule in her environment, which has greatly improved relationships and eliminated most of the status games. Gossip can be considered as a status game because those being gossiped about cannot defend themselves. Triangulation occurs when someone solves their problem with others around them, instead of directly addressing the person they have an issue with. We often justify gossip by claiming we need advice on how to handle a situation. When approached, Lori usually responds by saying that discussing the matter is acceptable as long as it results in the individual resolving the problem personally and promptly with the other party involved. No personal judgments. This point deserves further discussion. Firstly, we often have to evaluate someone's performance. This evaluation isn't a personal judgment but rather an assessment of their work. For example, if you agreed to write an article including specific points and forgot one, it would be appropriate for me to mention the oversight without making any personal comments about your abilities. How can this issue be resolved? This is a performance evaluation, and it's valuable because it specifically addresses expectations versus outcomes. It allows the other party to either justify their actions, I've considered it, and I don't believe that third point should be included due to, or make corrections. It provides direct feedback. However, we must avoid making personal evaluations. You never follow through on what we agree upon. You're unreliable. This is an assessment of one's character, by the way. In most cases, it's inaccurate as few people never do something or are always lazy. If someone's performance proves to be unsatisfactory over time, we can terminate collaboration with them. However, this doesn't mean that we must criticize the person on a personal level if we're not comfortable with how they interact with us or their work approach. It doesn't necessarily make them bad individuals. Nevertheless, we often form judgments outside of interactions, within our own thoughts. It's kind of our internal status game. For God's sake, how fat she is. She should stop eating sugar. Terrible pink dress. Or my favorite political party logo on a profile picture, OMG, another left-wing intellectual. This judging is a status game, because by condemning the other side in our heads, we make ourselves better. And at the same time, we need to realize that these judgments are not based on reality. They are really taking place in our heads. Dr. Joel Wade has a cool hack for this. Realize this and replace it with curiosity. Why is that? What is this person really like? What drove them to do this? The obese lady may have had a food shortage when she was little and is dealing like this. It is her decision. The lady in the pink dress is a Hello Kitty fan and defines herself by her style of dress. The gentleman with the political party logo is proud of his son who is running for office. It's essential to remember that during each interaction, we only see a small portion of a person's life story. We merely have a brief glimpse of their entire journey. The main objective often seems to be ranking ourselves higher in our imagined hierarchy, which creates a status anxiety. While making judgments about others may not seem helpful, it doesn't make us better or solve any issues they might face. It also doesn't contribute to personal growth. Evaluating other people's actions can still have some value, at least from our own perspective. By observing their behavior and recognizing patterns, we gain information that helps us decide who we spend time with, collaborate with, and so on. In this context, the judgments are not about being better or worse than others, but rather understanding if the observed interaction makes sense to us. There are 7 billion people in the world, which means we cannot give our time, attention, and energy to all of them. We must choose wisely who we spend our time with. Think about the closest 5 people you spend time with. Do you give your time to someone just because you went to school together? When making impulsive judgments, it's easier to maintain a neutral position, like saying, I don't have enough information to judge another person. Or to use curiosity by asking yourself, that's interesting, why is that person the way they are, working with fear. Authority can induce a form of fear in us. And long-term beta states are characterized by chronic stress. Both of these can be managed. When it comes to dealing with fear, becoming aware of it is crucial, but this isn't always easy. When we feel fearful, our bodies tend to focus on the fastest possible escape, rather than the cause of that fear. Instead of running away from fear, try going back to it and questioning what caused it. Of course, our body knows when we are in fear. That's why I recommend trying biofeedback between your body and mind. Regularly check how you feel, what you're thinking, and how it manifests in your body. If you can recognize the fear through your body's manifestations, you'll become aware of it in time, making it easy to process. A couple of times, I've given talks to really large groups of people. Usually, I don't get stressed out from lecturing. However, when I arrived at the CCH Hall in Hamburg, which was 3 floors high, my heart started racing, my heart rate variability dropped, and my breathing changed. I stood in front of the empty hall and observed what was happening to me. There was nowhere to run since my lecture wasn't until a few days later. The most rewarding thing was embracing these feelings. That's what Roman Tick taught me. He's an expert in understanding such feelings through his art. Stop and feel those feelings. You don't experience them often, so enjoy it. I encourage you to explore Roman Tick's projects, both as a solo artist and part of the art group Zeit Ohoven, and imagine the emotions he has experienced and that his art evokes in you. Fear is a very helpful emotion. It is meant to inform us of something significant. When something rustles in the grass, it may be a mouse, but we are afraid as if it were a snake. The lecture hall at CCH was nearly empty when I gave my talk. Who would wake up so early at a hacker conference, especially on the last day? And I have no issue with public speaking, and nothing negative is supposed to happen. Fear processing can take various forms. I recommend checking out Fear Setting by Tim Ferriss, which he discussed in his presentation at the TD conference. The other option is to simply become aware of your fear and experience it. Don't avoid it, recognize it's a bodily sensation, let it unfold and follow it. Fear of authority. The theme of fear of authority and fear of the absence of authority plays a crucial role in becoming a gamma. For alphas, this serves as a means to establish and consolidate their position while demonstrating their place within the hierarchy. Any strategy that works on overcoming fear of authority can be applied to other fears as well. This involves being aware of the fear, processing it, and ultimately evaluating how to deal with it either by not giving in to it and facing what we fear or avoiding it altogether, such as encountering authority. According to Tim Ferriss' guide, asking yourself what's the worst that could happen is essential. For instance, if you're afraid of authority due to a lack of proper stamped documents, and the worst possible outcome is receiving a fine, then either save up for the fine or find a way to obtain the necessary stamp. There's no need to fear authority. It often operates through fear, but being aware of it can be beneficial. And in that awareness, figure out what is the best strategy for us. If it's an authority with a magic stamp and a fine that we can financially handle, then suddenly instead of fear, we see authority as just a mere obstacle in the way, like a drunken dancer at a concert who hoots and flails his arms and legs, occasionally hitting someone. We decently walk 10 meters next to him and don't give a damn. There's no point in arguing with him, his words make no sense to us, and such interaction doesn't further our goal of enjoying the concert. Or life, fear of the absence of authority. A far more dangerous way for authorities to justify their existence and their position in the hierarchy is to induce fear of what would happen if they were not there. It's mostly irrational, but by asserting themselves through fear, it has huge implications, starting with simple things. For instance, concerning the sharing economy and rules, maintaining quality standards becomes crucial. This thought is often succeeded by a disastrous situation without state hygiene inspectors checking adherence to hygiene laws. Countless individuals would be poisoned by expired food. We must prevent this from occurring. Of course, unfortunate events can happen, as observed with Alphob Aboons at the beginning of this section. Interestingly, humans exist because none of our predecessors encountered such tragedies. Fire was even utilized by early humans for cooking purposes, decreasing the chance of poisoning, possibly dating back 1.5 million years or no later than 500,000 years. Our great-great-grandparents all managed to not poison their children with tainted food. Indeed, an unregulated dining establishment could harm patrons with contaminated food and likely cease operations as a result. Interestingly, a friend of mine who was poisoned by restaurant food and was sick for 3 days ate in a restaurant with proper hygiene standards. If someone lists the scary scenarios that would occur if the authority did not intervene, the first question arises: if the authority exists, will it really solve the problem? Authority is all about the business of fear, which they usually first invoke and then justify their existence on the grounds that things will only get worse without them. One of my favorite principles of this phenomenon is airport security checks. Politicians have responded to the threat of terrorism. Someone can hijack a plane and blow it up or crash it into a building. We know it has already happened, the threat is real. And then they will introduce checks at airports, where they will make you throw away your organic ghee that you have bought on the road because it could dissolve and become a liquid. People strip off their outer layers of clothing, quickly pour out the remaining water they have, and measure their pocket knives in relation to their credit cards to adhere to the established rules. They also opt for plastic forks instead of metal ones when packing their belongings. After going through such checks, individuals believe that a terrorist attack is no longer a possibility. However, they overlook two crucial points. In the realm of security, we often come across the term red team. A red team simulates highly aggressive attacks, similar to what terrorists carry out. These red teams, when assessing airport security measures, have achieved a success rate of over 50% in smuggling explosives past the security systems. Even though passengers are unable to bring their liquids on board, it doesn't deter those who aim to smuggle explosives through airport security successfully. Despite this reality, people feel secure as politicians have alleviated their fear. By the way, the Terminal Cornucopia Art Project demonstrates how lethal weapons can be assembled using items purchased from duty-free shops at airports after passing through security checks. Terrorists don't need to smuggle anything. They can purchase all the necessary materials for an attack from a duty-free shop. For those who enjoyed watching MacGyver or find videos of exploding dangerous items fascinating, check out Terminal Cornucopia, which showcases explosions made using everyday objects like condoms, spray cans, and hair products. Terrorists don't target the same locations repeatedly. Instead, they adapt their tactics to strike new targets, such as a train on a bridge or even driving a truck through a crowded public square. Despite authorities' efforts, we are not truly protected from terrorist attacks. Rather, the attacks have simply been relocated to different areas. Understanding this fear of the absence of authority that authority figures instill in us is crucial. This comprehension is particularly strong among libertarians and gammas, whereas leftists and rightists often struggle with it. When most people think about the word anarchy, they often imagine burning dystopian cities, where the only reason you don't get shot in the street is because there's a police officer on every corner to prevent attacks and put perpetrators in jail. In reality, what scares them is something else. It's called anomia. This refers to a situation where people act as if there are no rules. However, most of these rules don't actually come from the government. Bad things generally don't happen mainly because we have social rules that are enforced through various means, like social networks, not referring to online platforms, reputation systems, and individuals' need for recognition and maintaining their integrity. This doesn't mean that simply relying on people's goodness is enough. It isn't sufficient. Social rules can be effectively enforced in different ways. For example, if I were to brutally beat up my sister's husband, not only would I no longer be invited to any family gatherings, but I'd also lose out on inheritance and the benefits of engaging with my family. Even my family will make sure that my reputation suffers, so people are cautious around me. Not just my family, but everyone who knows about this issue too. My life will be incredibly challenging. I won't be able to secure a job or even find a partner. Of course, most individuals will be deterred by their moral values, but there's more than one enforcement method available, and these methods are much older than nation-states or the concept of police. The fear of the absence of authority can best be addressed by asking questions like, how did people solve this issue when there was no authority, and how can this problem be resolved? The focus here is on solving the issue. My friends and I once considered a campaign to ban methamphetamine, meth. I think it's a funny idea. Meth is extremely destructive, and despite strict laws prohibiting its possession and sale, anyone, including young people, can obtain it. Our campaign should have been named Let's Ban Meth for Real. It's similar to campaigns where people call on authorities to save the planet because evil capitalists are polluting the whole world. But who is allowing them to pollute now? If countries are so successful and effective at reducing emissions, how can it be that emissions keep rising? Shouldn't we be demonstrating against emission allowances? In his book Progress Without Permission, Robert Chovanculiak looked at what people do when authority is truly absent. The environments where this occurs are numerous. A number of internet platforms have found themselves in a regulatory vacuum. One of the first was eBay. Anyone could sign up and buy or sell goods. The problem was that buyers and sellers could be almost anywhere globally, so consumer law was difficult to implement. The platform created an excellent system based on reputation, not penalties and fines. This experiment has been replicated by sharing economy platforms, restaurant review systems, hotel reservation portals, and similar services. In the absence of authority, people don't beg authorities to regulate them. Instead, they come up with a solution to address the primary issue. The fear of no authority is often considered as a choice between a just society and an anomia, which is actually a false dichotomy. People might think that removing authority will lead to chaos, such as burning cars or exploding houses. However, these fears are unfounded, as there exist elegant and effective solutions for various problems. This fear stems from both ignorance of alternative approaches and a lack of creative thinking in business. Stress. I mentioned in the introduction that Sapolsky measured reduced cortisol levels in gamma baboons. If you don't want to measure cortisol from saliva or blood, the other option is to measure stress through heart rate variability, HRV. Reduced chronic stress can be seen in gamma individuals, but I believe it also works the other way around by reducing chronic stress. All of the hacks mentioned above will become easier. I haven't encountered a stressed-out gamma yet. Most of them exude calmness and serenity, even though many are highly productive. This doesn't mean that life doesn't present obstacles for them, or that they don't experience episodes of acute stress. However, they do manage these challenges, and when they return to their baseline, it is much lower than the average stressed beta. Interestingly, many alpha individuals I know share a similar trait. The main difference is that they often cause stress in others. There are several guidelines for managing chronic stress, which can be found in my lectures on biohacking. I will summarize some important ones. First, inducing acute stress through intense exercise like interval training, cold showers, and the Wim Hof method or participating in adrenaline sports. Second, exposing yourself to the flow state by engaging in activities you truly enjoy, such as writing or programming. Lastly, relaxing after acute stress with a massage, sauna, or other relaxation techniques. Now, let's talk about victim mentality. This is a common condition among people and results from our domestication. We often feel entitled to something and believe someone is always hurting us, especially when we identify ourselves as part of a specific group. I have not encountered any manifestation of victim mentality in gamma individuals. Instead, I think it is more indicative of the submissiveness found in beta individuals. Their ruler, often replaced with the mental image of society, does not want to indulge or provide them with something, leading them to put themselves in the victim position and demand redress. However, apart from protest marches and heartbreaking blogs, this approach will not change their behavior. This is not to say that we can never be a victim. There are many injustices in the world. If we eliminate the victim mentality, we take responsibility for correcting injustice. To overcome such mentality, if we don't receive a government grant, we should not feel entitled to it. There are numerous ways of funding available, including private grants, crowdfunding, ticket sales, and sponsorships. Money represents energy invested, so by raising money, we validate whether we're solving a problem that enough people care about. Here, we always need to change our mindset from the problem is that I don't have enough money for my project, to, for example, how can I show people the value my project brings, and how do I convince them that this value is significant enough for them to share the value they created? Or let's consider gay marriage and its recognition in society. At first glance, it appears like a problem that only authority can truly resolve. That is until you stop focusing on what authority should do and begin examining the nature of the problem itself, how people have solved it without relying on authority up to now, and alternative solutions other than by appealing to authority. During the Pride event in Bratislava, Pavel Travnik organized a lecture at Parallel Polis titled Partner Relationships Without the State, where he proposed a non-state solution to most of the issues that registered partnerships or marriages typically solve. Inheritance, health information, financial settlement, name change. If you add a ceremony, such a solution can be even better than a state-sanctioned wedding in many ways. To get out of the victim mentality, we just need to stop thinking about what authority should do or how to change the majority mindset. Instead, let's move on to the practical question, what is my problem and how can it be solved? This ultra-constructive approach has already been mentioned in this book. Of course, one solution may not suit everyone. People may solve a problem differently based on what suits them best. For example, by moving to a country where the issue can be resolved differently. I call this jurisdictional arbitrage. Often, you don't even need to move entirely. Just solving the problem in a different jurisdiction might do the trick. The victim mentality is extremely toxic for our minds. People often experience constant stress, knowing they face injustice but feeling powerless to change it. The solution depends on the democratic majority and politicians, or in other words, other people. It can take decades to shift the majority's opinion with a lot of effort and uncertain results. Victim mentality is linked to feelings of entitlement. This might involve believing we have a right to equal partnerships or healthcare. A well-developed gamma personality avoids falling into victim mentality by not feeling entitled to anything. They understand that if they want something, it's their responsibility to work for it. The world owes us nothing and we can't claim anything. A powerful way to eliminate the victim mentality and sense of entitlement is through gratitude. It's an effective tool for removing negativity. We are fortunate to live on a planet that supports our existence in amazing ways. What we do with it is up to us. Conclusion: I know only a few converted gamma individuals, but fortunately, there are many people around me who can set an example in various situations and areas of life. Gamma individuals exude something special, and if you don't know many of them, you might mistake them for a more relaxed alpha. If they are evolved enough and have gone through phases of rebellion, rejection, and accepted themselves, they are pleasant, creative, productive, imaginative, helpful, good to work with. Open-minded and non-manipulative. If you feel an inclination towards becoming a gamma, identify areas suitable for your development. Live consciously, enhance healthy self-esteem, process fear, eliminate stress, be aware of hierarchies and abandon them as soon as possible. Avoid unnecessary judgment and take action rather than holding opinions. Live examples will also help. They are not an authority, only an inspiration. You will get some feeling from them that cannot be easily described in words. It is such a special charisma. Where can you meet them? They are often entrepreneurs. They are often libertarians, so you'll run into them in libertarian organizations. They love liberty, so visit your nearest Parallel Polis. And be careful not to make them into an authority you want to copy. If they sense that, they'll run away. You will very rarely meet someone I call a blooming gamma. I know less than 10 of them personally. On the other hand, someone who is heading there can serve as an inspiration to you. If you don't aspire to be a gamma, I believe it will be helpful for you to recognize these tendencies in others and know how to interact with them and be inspired by at least some of their qualities. You can also live a happy life as an alpha or beta. For me, it's just a bit boring, but you can fight boredom in other ways as it suits you. Find more content like this in my book titled Cryptocurrencies: Hack Your Way to a Better Life. It is a guide for Bitcoin and cryptocurrency ninjas. Discover how to use the Lightning Network, how to accept cryptocurrencies, what opportunities there are for different professions, how to handle various market situations, and how to use crypto to improve your life. Get it on my eShop, which accepts BTC, BTC, XMR, and even old school plastic, or purchase it from Amazon.
Thank you for listening. I'm sorry for any possible quirks generated by the large language model or text-to-speech engine, but I think it is worth transferring these blocks into audio form for people who can't or don't have time to read. So I hope it was useful to you. And I would really appreciate if you used Value for Value podcasting apps to listen to this episode and stream me some sets or boost. I read all the comments on the boosts as well. So if you have any comment about this content, feel free to use Fountain.fm or any other app and boost this podcast. Thank you very much.